Ebu Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Judge Torres, running January 10th to 19th at the Milagro Theater in Portland. Judge Torres is a modern-day fairy tale rooted in Salvadoran folklore. Xiomara Torres faces many obstacles in her turbulent journey crossing the border, maneuvering the U.S. foster care system, missing her family, aging out, and becoming the most recent Latinx judge in Multnomah County, Oregon. This is her story. Again, that's Judge Torres, running January 10th through 19th, weekly on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information is available at kbu.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tuned into KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Happy New Year and welcome to The Bike Show, broadcasting from the KBOO studio in Portland, Oregon. My name is Tori Bortman and I'm joined this morning in the studio by Alon Robb. Good morning, Alon. How are you?
Good. Good morning and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. In today's show, we will hear inspiring projects in Portland, Oregon and Budapest, Hungary that address illness and hunger and, with the aid of the bicycle, connect with some of our most underserved and forgotten brothers and sisters. In the first half of the show, we'll talk with Dr. Bill Tupper, Medical Director of Portland Street Medicine, as well as Leslie Corliss, a volunteer with Portland People's Outreach Project. In the second half of our hour, we will be joined by Hungarian cyclist and activist Ildikó Toth, who, with the organization the Budapest Bicycle Mafia, helps alleviate some of the hunger and neglect affecting many in Hungary. Before we introduce our first guest, here is Alon Robb with a few news items from the cycling universe. Alon?
Yeah, today just two quick items. Female missionaries with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints worldwide now have the option to wear dress slacks instead of dresses. The change was motivated by a desire to help protect them from mosquito and flea bites and the diseases they carry, and also to make it easier for the women missionaries to ride bicycles as they distribute the literature. And the Guardian newspaper reports that in the Turkish border city of Kilis, bicycles are given to children who meet three requirements. They have to help convince a relative to quit smoking, maintain good grades in school, and promise to ride an hour a day. City leaders want to turn the city into a bike-friendly place, and the goal is to distribute 15,000 bikes. So far, 4,000 have been distributed. I'm very happy that I got a bicycle, says 9-year-old Hilmi Kalban, one of the many recent recipients of his shiny new two-wheeler, a black Corvette Python mountain bike with red trim. The city has built a few bicycle lanes so far, 4-mile bicycle lane, and plans to build a 20-mile network of bike lanes throughout the city. The goal is to make it a model city, one of bicycles, a healthy lifestyle, and a culture of existence, in the words of its mayor.
Thank you so much, Alon. Our first guests today are Dr. Bill Tupper, who is the medical director, and Duncan Svetsky of Portland Street Medicine. Dr. Tupper is an emergency medicine specialist in Portland and has been practicing medicine for over 30 years. Duncan Svetsky is a nursing student, advocate, and activist. Good morning, Dr. Tupper and Duncan Svetsky. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Tori. Good morning.
And Dr. Tupper, do you prefer, I hear that out in the world you are known as Dr. Bill. Do you prefer that?
That works for me.
Okay, whichever you prefer, just sure. Let us know. First questions. Tell us a little bit about what Portland Street Medicine is and how you got involved with it.
Yeah. Portland Street Medicine, well, first of all, we're very new. My involvement began just under a year ago. I had just finished my last shift in the ED. I was lucky enough to be able to retire a wee bit early and got a little bored after maybe 2-3 months of just riding my bike. It's hard to believe. And found myself curious about some social causes and worked my way over to Allentown, Pennsylvania for a conference on street medicine, something I'd never really heard of before. I was blown away by the conference, blown away by the people, blown away by the stories, and really blown away by the effectiveness of this type of practice.
Is this happening a lot in other parts of the country already?
Yeah, we're a little bit behind here in Portland.
What?
Yep.
Portland's behind in something?
Yes, we are. Yep. The first kind of modern day street medicine program began in Boston in the late 80s. There was a really vigorous program in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. A lot of the East Coast cities where things are very cold, street medicine is way more evolved there than here on the West Coast.
Interesting.
But I came away thinking I will just join the Portland street medicine program and discovered there was no such thing. So here we are.
So you decided to create?
Yeah, I and a nurse friend of mine, Lacey McCarley, another physician, Dan Bissell, and Drew Grabham, our social worker.
And what is the goal of the program?
Well, the goal right now is to get things underway, effectively the goal in the first year or two are to make the connections. You really can't do this work without getting to know the people, how they live, what the needs are, what the medical needs are as well. So that's pretty much the goal of the first 2 years. We want to, of course, cure cancer and solve homelessness, but that'll be maybe year three.
And bring world peace and justice.
Bring world peace, yes.
Well, that's year five.
Yeah.
So Duncan Zvetsky, how did you get involved with the program?
I had heard about it through kind of the woodworks because me and a few other nursing students were doing a lot of homeless and unhoused folks outreach through the nursing school.
Do they make that part of the programming?
No, that is something that we did on our own. Yeah, through one of the student organizations there. And I've been involved in homeless advocacy and outreach for quite some time, since early college. And we heard about it through the woodworks and then started pressuring our school to let us do as one of our rotations, one of our clinical rotations, do around with street medicine. So we connected with them, connected with one of our clinical preceptors, and got the ball rolling there and spent the last 3 months, right? I think working on organizational projects. So we started our flu clinic with them, which was a student-driven project.
And what is the flu clinic?
So we had it set out a goal of the early part of the flu season to vaccinate, distribute 100 flu vaccines to our houseless neighbors. And we had to develop all the protocols and get all the materials and all that. So we are well on our way. I think we're up to 70 vaccines so far this season. So.
And what is the population, numbers, characteristics, how would you describe the population you aim to serve?
Well, we, as you can imagine, the homeless population in Portland is pretty varied, so it's hard to really define our population. Because we are small, we're fairly limited to only being able to go to certain communities and encampments. So right now we're focused on the pretty far outer southeast bike corridor, the Springwater 205 bike corridor. Mm-hmm. And then we also spend a fair amount of time in the inner southeast at the Sunnyside Community House neighborhood, St. Francis, and then, of course, downtown along the Esplanade. Mm-hmm. But that's not enough.
No, not nearly. I mean, do you know the current-ish numbers on how many people are living outside?
Yeah, so in the most recent snapshot, so transition projects and the three, the Tri-County area will do a one-night snapshot where they literally physically count everyone that they can. There was 4,177 people who were chronically homeless last year, in 2017. That's a 10% increase from 2015. There's some really interesting numbers in there. It was like 124% increase in unhoused transgender folks in the area. Fortunately, the numbers for people who are sheltered, so have access to one of the city shelters, has gone up, but there's still a lot of folks out there rough sleeping.
It seems like if it's gone up that big of percentage, it's hard to
It's hard to keep up. Yeah.
Places for people to be warm.
Absolutely.
And dry and safe.
And it's pretty common knowledge that 4,177 is a underestimate. Mm-hmm. The new count is beginning, I think, this week.
Mm-hmm. I volunteered with Uplift, an organization that delivers food to people in low residency hotels and Burnside area. And it's amazing to see, you know, elderly and kids and teenagers and, you know, just... Mm-hmm. Across the yep. range, yeah.
Yeah, what does the cross-section of people that you're serving look like?
Well, yeah, we did a quick little data collection in the first 6 months we got started in, and for the most part, we're about 50-50 male-female. Our population, predictably, is typically adults. We have seen, at least probably 10% of geriatric population. We have seen some children, just more in passing than anything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There are unhoused children, but I think they're either healthy or they're being protected. It's a little hard to say.
Yeah, okay. We tend to interact with more of the rougher sleepers just because they tend to be a little more spread out and farther out where we are doing our outreach, so...
Well, I'd like to bring Leslie Corliss into the conversation. As a volunteer for the Portland People's Outreach Project, Leslie strives to meet their mission, which is to serve the needs of the injection drug-using community by distributing vital harm reduction supplies within a supportive, non-judgmental context. That includes distribution by bicycle every Friday night. Leslie Corliss, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So can you tell us a little bit about exactly what Portland's People's Outreach Project does and how it started and how you got involved?
Yeah, so PPOP, it's a lot easier to say PPOP than the whole Portland People's Outreach Project.
Well, I will keep saying it for our listeners. If people tune in later, it's easier for them to know what we're talking about. So, yeah.
Okay. So Portland People's Outreach Project is a sub-project of the People's Harm Reduction Alliance out of Seattle. And it was started about 3 years ago. Really, someone moved down from Seattle. They were involved with People's Harm Reduction Alliance there in Seattle and saw the need in our community for something that has a similar model, which is a peer-focused, so drug users are involved at every level. You don't need to be housed in order to be involved in our organization. You can volunteer. You can be in a leadership role. And what we do is provide harm reduction supplies throughout the city, mostly the inner core at this point in time, just because of resources. And we provide clean injection supplies, clean supplies for other routes of drug use, so like snorting kits, and we do have some pipes as well. And then we also...
I did not even know a snorting kit existed or was in need.
Yeah. You know, sort of in the similar fashion of you don't want to be sharing syringes or any other injection supplies. You don't want to be sharing the same straw.
Yeah, it makes sense. I just hadn't thought through it.
Yeah, so we have those as well. And so we're trying to serve the larger drug-using community. We're primarily focused on people without homes and people who are living outside. But we do have also people who are housed that come seek our services because... drug use and living outside is not necessarily synonymous. There are people who are living outside who don't use drugs, and there are people who are living inside that do use drugs.
And is the goal short-term care, or is there any concern with long-term care? Is that possible or part of your mission?
So our goal is to help people who use drugs and who are marginalized by living outside to feel supported and loved. And so... I'm going to extrapolate here a little. A lot of times when people are asking about long-term care, what they're asking about is if we support people getting into programs where they don't use drug use or where they don't use drugs. I'm just making an assumption on that question. And what our program does is if people ask us for resources on where not to use or, you know, if they want help because their drug use is not working for them anymore, we can offer them directions on places to go, but we are really building our long-term relationships with people to show a supportive face to that community.
Well, and I'd also assume that if you saw somebody that had either a side effect of that or, you know, needed to be treated for hepatitis or something like that, that you would you have places to point them towards to help them find those resources as well.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And what is your own background and how did you get involved?
So I have a background in public health, and then like probably just about everyone in this country, there some personal experience with people in my lives around addiction. And I got involved in this organization because I had left town for a little bit and I had been working with another harm reduction organization and came back into town and met the folks at PPOP and really just clicked. The model makes sense for me to be able to really stand in community and go exactly to where they're at rather than a fixed site location.
How does that differ from other programs that you've seen or worked with?
Really, it's just that we're resourced to go into exactly where people are. We can bring services to them rather than always having a fixed site location where they can go to. And then we have fewer barriers to volunteering with our organization. And there are many good reasons for those other organizations where they have specific requirements for us. If we can have a place for you to be able to come and volunteer and participate, regardless of your housing status, regardless of your drug use status.
And how does the bicycle fit into the program?
Oh, I love the bicycle. I love it. So our Friday night bike rides are honestly my favorite part of my week. And so it fits in because we're very flexible on bikes. So on Fridays, we get all set up. We load a bunch of syringes and clean drug use supplies and safer sex supplies and socks, when we're lucky to have socks, onto a couple bike carts. And we ride around to locations where people are living outside in the community. Sometimes that can be a challenge, especially with the frequency of the sweeps, to be able to find people. But we just hit the streets and go meet people where they're at.
And I want to ask Portland Street Medicine as well, and that this can be for either Duncan Zvetsky or for Dr. Bill. How do you use bikes? Why do you like them? And how has it changed, or how are you incorporating more bikes into your?
Okay, full disclosure: we just got the bikes.
Great.
Yep.
But why did you get them?
Oh, that's a kind of a really interesting story. We first of all, it again, Portland is a little bit behind in street medicine, but why can't we be ahead of the ball in other ways in street medicine?
Oh, interesting. So other street medicine doesn't necessarily utilize bikes.
I don't think so.
Bikes.
No.
Interesting.
If they do, it might be one or two people, but that would be a new development in the world of Portland, or in the world of street medicine. We were out working in an encampment near the head of the Springwater Corridor, and the people that were living there were very appreciative and grateful to a local bike shop called Splendid Cyclery. They had opened up their spigot. They it wasn't like a huge give, but they had a spigot outside their shop, and they opened it up to the community so that they could have fresh, clean water.
Which
daily
is a
basis, no questions
we
asked.
We absolutely take for granted.
Yep.
We think garbage. We think think bathrooms, but we forget that. We need to drink water.
Need to drink water all the time.
So we approached Splendid just to thank them, because we need for them to know that the community around them was grateful. And they looked and they said, "Do you want a bike?" And we said, "Yeah, who doesn't?" And they pointed to this beautiful cargo bike that was donated to them. And it was new and it was ready to go to a needing organization. So we took it. And subsequently, we've had a second cargo bike donated and a fleet donated by Friends of Duncan's.
Yep.
Excellent. And so how is that, Duncan, how has that changed the ability for the people to reach people?
So we're still working on how to appropriately integrate them, but just using Portland People's Outreach Project as an example, we go out with them occasionally on their Friday night rounds in our van, and they always crush us to the spot. Their setup is amazing. And so I think we're kind of taking cues from them. And the truth is, as the city's policy of displacement and sweeping is kind of ramping up, folks are having to go kind of farther afield to not have to get hassled and harassed by city agents. And that's making it harder for us to track down some of our clients and find them. So the bikes are going to give us a little more leeway to do that once we're actually able to get them integrated in, because a lot of folks are sleeping along the 205 corridor and out on the Springwater corridor where we can't get our van. So if we can get a small team of a couple of folks out there, and we can, you know, drop off on one end and get picked up on the other and meet everyone in between.
Well, when you said full disclosure, I thought you were going to say you hate bicycles, you prefer an SUV or a private jet. This is a question for both of you and also Leslie. Without divulging, you know, identifying details, can you tell us a little bit about some of the people you see? So they're not just numbers and statistics, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, of course we see a wide variety, and probably had about 500 patient encounters so far in this past year. Several stand out. It's going to be tough to not reveal identities based on some descriptions, but we have a woman with thought disorder who is kind of your classic, we'll say, bag lady. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that term is used anymore. It's not really who she is by any means. But we were called to see her for a medical issue, and we see her every week. We're trying to move towards getting her indoors. We've helped assist her get some funding through Social Security that was just waiting in an account for 10 years. Every week have a delightful conversation, and I think everybody feels a little bit better, and we're hopefully going to get her indoors shortly. We had a woman who her husband asked us to see her. Mm-hmm. We weren't quite sure really the need, but we kind of had to work to find her. The description of her location was not obvious. We ended up finding her, talked. She looked good. Spoke with her, did a brief examination in a tent. And her abdomen was rigid, and she indeed had perfed an appendicitis about a week before that. Mm. And her body was perforated.
Yes, I knew what you meant, but either way, that's major. It's shocking she didn't
she
die
was not
by
well,
the time you
and
found her.
He knew that she wasn't well, and they were simply looking for some affirmation that it is time to go to the hospital. We lifted her. Duncan and David lifted her to a local emergency department, and she is doing well. Mm-hmm. There's ongoing care because she still doesn't have a phone, and it's wet outside, and every week or two she and her husband have to move locations, but it's about the relationship and the continuity, and the 90% of the work is being there.
Well, and it seems like in that particular case, if her husband hadn't said, hey, we really need you to look, just looking at her as a general human, nobody else thought anything was wrong. And I think when people are living outside and are disenfranchised, they don't necessarily have community or neighbors. So you kind of create that community to a certain extent to be able to be there, and they know you're going to be there.
And he was sort of dancing around that ask. He was almost presented her as a hypothetical. What would you do with a woman with blah, blah, blah? And then I finally looked at him. I said, you'd like for us to see her, wouldn't you? And he said, would you? I said, of course, that's what we're doing. Yeah. So
Leslie, I think you had something to add there.
Oh yeah, I just wanted to maybe push back on the idea that people don't have community because they're living in community with each other, mm-hmm. and they're caring for each other, just like Dr. Bill is describing in terms of going out and doing that initial step of vetting a service provider to see if they would help or are good enough to help their loved ones. And they're caring for each other just in terms of someone within that we serve, that's an individual that we meet. We know someone who has reversed multiple overdoses. Literally a hero. I mean, there's more than one person, but this person is out there saving lives with naloxone on a very regular basis, caring for his community, and everyone is caring for each other.
And do people in his community, in their community, know that this person is someone to go to if there's trouble? Like, hey, so this person has become known as, hey, we know, I'm going to make up a name, Jim, we got to go, hey, go see Dr. Jim, and he'll give you I'm going to forget the name of, can you,
It's naloxone. It's the overdose reversal.
Yeah, he has the naloxone. And so as an organization, do you make sure that quote-unquote Jim has extra because he's known as that volunteer?
Unfortunately, we aren't resourced for that. So what we do is we have some naloxone that we're able to distribute at each site. We would love to have an unlimited supply of naloxone and help people save more lives out there. But there are people who are known to carry within the community, and people know to ask them. And then there are some people who carry for themselves, and it's really heartening, and it's beautiful to see how people are generous and share their resources with each other within their community.
And does the city or county, do they help both your groups, or where do you get your funding, supplies?
We're hearing some laughter here, so.
part of Leslie, the military budget of the country goes your way.
Leslie Corliss, would you like to answer that first for your organization?
Yeah, so a lot of our funding comes from the People's Harm Reduction Alliance. And so that's where we get a lot of our supplies. They're able to coordinate a discount on naloxone specifically. You know, the county does operate a beautiful harm reduction services and syringe exchange, and they offer naloxone, as does Outside In. So there are other fantastic harm reduction organizations in the community. But we aren't resourced through a lot of more traditional means like the county, like public health agencies. We're more grant-based.
Yeah, I was going to say grant-based.
Yeah.
And how about you?
Well, we are kind of unfunded right now. Actually, and we're reliant on private donation right now. Again, we started in February, and we just began our grant cycle asks at the end of this past year. So, it's not very expensive to do this. Probably the biggest costs are insurance costs, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. So the private donation thing works. We get pretty much all of our medical supplies donated.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, this is not sustainable. This is where we're at right now. So,
we need a firm supply of that stuff.
Yeah,
for sure.
In terms of affiliations, we have loose affiliations with local hospital systems and the county supportive of our work. We attend the weekly what do you call it? Sweeps. We call it the sweeps call.
It's called the sweeps call. Yeah.
And what is? We're running out of time, and I want to make sure that we get time to ask both of your organizations what our listeners can do to help. But quickly, you've both mentioned that there's issues around sweeps, that this changes the dynamic of everything. Can you talk about that just briefly in about a minute?
Yeah, for sure. So the city's policy of sweeps and displacement is, and that's what it is, it's displacement. It is moving people around the city just to kind of, as a gesture to the neighbors to say, hey, we're doing something. It's not actually solving any issues, though, and it's actually making our clients' lives that much more difficult because we have some of the folks we talked about will have had kind of major and important appointments that they need to make for their medical care or for housing. Even they want to get transitioned into housing, and they're unable to make it because they got a notice saying, hey, their camp's going to be swept.
So they get notices ahead of time now.
Yes. Yeah.
Which seems good, except now it puts them in a state of anxiety and paranoia that at any moment, their stuff could be gone.
Exactly. And I'm not going to say oftentimes, some of the times those notices are not real notices. They are not actually intending to come through, but it's to get some folks who are more inclined to move out to somewhere else before that happens. It's a really difficult thing to navigate, and it makes it really hard for people to have a life continuity because you're always having to deal with this disjointed.
As if it's not hard enough having life continuity,
exactly.
Living outside and the challenges that come with that, but then also now you have to move you said it was about every 2 weeks?
It depends on where you're sleeping. Yeah, some places are pressured more than others, but yeah, there's some places who they get notices every week.
So Leslie Corliss, I'd love to hear what our listeners can do to help with the Portland People's Outreach Project.
Well, we are always looking for funding, obviously, but also you can volunteer with us. We would love to have you volunteer. If you're someone who is interested in caring for the community, people who use drugs and are living outside, we can be found at PortlandPeoplesOutreachProject.org, or you can email us at peopop@PeoplesHarmReductionAlliance.org.
And we'll have links to these on our Facebook page after today's show.
Awesome.
And very similarly, we're at PortlandStreetMedicine.org. We could always use some more donations, medical supplies.
Do you need help also with grant writing or things like that since you're starting to do more of that executive nonprofit type work?
We actually have that in place. We have a dedicated grant a strategist on our team, so that's wonderful. And we do, in terms of personnel and volunteer, we can't do this alone. You can reach us through our website.
And do you need to be a doctor or a nurse to do this?
Well, that'll get you in a little quicker. But and know that if you do send us an inquiry, it's about a 2 to 4 week turnover for us to get to them, because we are all volunteer and all donation, and we're doing our best.
Yeah. And I'd say our biggest ask is to acknowledge your unhoused neighbors. Just say hi to them.
Yep.
Say what's up. See what they need. Yep. That goes a really long way in building a better, tighter knit community for everybody in our neighborhood. So
yeah, thanks.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We have been speaking with Dr. Bill Tepper and Duncan Zvetsky of Portland Street Medicine, a coalition of volunteer medical providers, social workers, care managers, and lay people dedicated to reaching people living outside, as well as Leslie Corliss, volunteer for the Portland People's Outreach Program, whose mission is to serve the needs of the injection drug using community by distributing vital harm reduction supplies with a supportive, non-judgmental context. Thank you, Dr. Tepper, Duncan Svetsky, and Leslie Corliss, and your fellow volunteers for all of your valuable work.
Thank you, Kabu. Really,
yeah, and right. Thank you for joining us on the show. We wish you much success to you and the organizations till the day that healthcare, housing, and justice are viewed as a basic human rights available to everyone. So,
in the
second half of our show, we will be joined by Hungarian cyclist and activist of the Budapest Bike Mafia, an organization dedicated to fighting neglect and apathy with the bicycle as an important ally. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Really good.
Okay. You are listening to KBOO Portland, the KBOO Bike Show, and we are here today talking about people living outside and the resources that can reach them.
And in the studio are Tori Bortman and Alon Rob. In the second half of the show, we are happy to have as our guest Ildikó Tóth of the Budapest Bicycle Mafia, an organization dedicated to fighting neglect and apathy with the bicycle as an important ally. Good day, or in your case, good evening, And welcome to the show. Hi.
Good evening, everybody, and good day for you.
Yes, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Before we hear about the organization, maybe a few questions about your country and city. Can you tell us a little bit about the city of Budapest, Hungary, who lives there, maybe a little bit about recent history?
Sure. So Hungary is, as you maybe know or you don't know, it's in Central Europe. It's a small country, actually. We have almost 10 million people here. Budapest is the capital of the country, and here are living approximately 2 million people. I was born here, and I lived here in the most time of my life. Yeah.
What's the bicycle culture?
Yes.
What is the bicycle culture there like? I think it's changed quite a bit in the last 10 years, hasn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. So since 2000, approximately, we have more and more cyclists here in Hungary and also here in Budapest. There was also research a few years ago that almost 4% of the population are using their bikes for going to work.
That's wonderful.
Not so much, but yeah, it could be more. But we are a small country. I think it's very, very good. There is also a small difference between cyclists in Budapest and in other regions. For example, in small towns, because there is more popular the bicycle, but the number of cyclists is growing also in the whole country and also in Budapest.
And does the state and the city invest in bicycles? Are they building bicycle lanes, for example?
We have in Budapest also community cycling, so we have a lot of possibilities to rent bikes regularly, but unfortunately the government is busy now with other things. More money is being spent for building bicycle roads in the last few years, but at least with cyclists' eyes, I think it's not so much. Rather, the civil organizations are making the cycling popular.
And how are they doing that?
For example, Bike Mafia, so Budapest Bike Mafia, our organization, one of our projects is that when we get bicycles, like donations, we have a factory, we have people for renovating these, and we give these renovated bicycles for people in need, for families, for children, that we make also popular, that we can show them that maybe they can't have the possibility to have a car, but they have a possibility to be in move with bicycles.
That's wonderful.
And how did the organization come into being? How did it start?
It was the December 2011, when Zoltán Havasi, he's our founder, he's the founder of Bike Mafia, he was discussing with his friends what they were going to do during Christmas. And as they are bikers and they were being off in the past, it should have obviously been something related to bikes. And so they decided that they will go to the place of Zoltán and they prepare their sandwiches, and they will bring this food to the homeless people on the streets for Christmas. It was for Christmas. And so they created also an event on Facebook 7 years ago. They really did it. They organized the first event. They went to the street and they give the food and the blankets to the homeless people. And so this all came into being. Yeah, and I think... now for us, everybody is definitely clear that it was a very good start 7 years ago.
And now the organization, the Budapest Bike Mafia, has events year-round, correct?
Sorry?
You have programs all year now, not just at Christmas. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about a bit about some of those?
We have now 12 different projects in Budapest Bike Mafia, and of course we have also projects during Christmas and during the New Year. Basically, we help for homeless people and people in need. Like, we give them the donation, what we also get, and what we prepare for them: food, clothes, toiletries, what they need, for example. So easy things like toilet paper and napkins and tissues. And we go also to homeless shelter. We ask the people what they need, but we ask also the people who are working there what the people are needing there, who lives on the shelters. We have also projects in schools that we can make also sensitive the kids for helping, and to show also the early generation how easy is it to help people in need.
In the first half of the show, we spoke with a few people in Portland who talked about services for the homeless. What is the situation with the homeless population in Hungary? Is it mostly refugees, or is it growing? Is there any estimate how many homeless people there are?
Yes, they are growing, unfortunately. We can't exact numbers, but in Budapest there are approximately around 8,000, 8 to 10,000 homeless people.
And how many now? How big is the population of Budapest overall?
Approximately 2 million.
Okay.
So 1.8 million. Yes. The problem now is the situation after the new law that maybe you know also, that now it's strictly forbidden to live in the street. So the homeless people have to leave the street when the police comes. So they need to go to the homeless shelter. As I was also in homeless shelters, I can tell you it's not easy. It's not easy even to find a place in a homeless shelter. And it's very hard to live there with this situation.
Is there are there enough places in the homeless shelters for 8,000 people?
No.
So where does does the government have another idea of where these people are going to go?
No.
Oh, they just made a law. Great.
The people are hiding now in the last month, but can tell you what we can do. We are doing. We try to find the people. We try to find information for these people, not only to give them food and clothes, also information where they could get help, where they could get medicine help. So if they are really sick, if they need help, where they can go in the city, and who is contactable in the situation.
And how are you received by the people you meet and serve? Have you been able to establish some long-term connections?
Yes, I'm involved in Budapest Bike Mafia since 2016. And yes, I had a lot of possibilities to meet people on the street, to speak with them, to know about them more. So, for example, how they became homeless. And yes, I know, unfortunately and also fortunately, a lot of stories about different life situation of these people.
What brings people, what makes them become homeless in Hungary?
So what I've heard, the main cause is divorce.
Interesting.
After lose everything, after lose the perspective, after lose lose the money, lose the house, lose the family, but also, as I told, to lose the future plans. Mm-hmm. And you know, these people, they need really help. And if you lose everything, you lose your house, you lose your family, maybe you only see a way in alcohol, and this is not a way what can help for a homeless.
Yes, absolutely. So how many members does the Budapest Bike Mafia have?
Here I can't tell you either an exact number, but we are so and 100. The core of Budapest Bike Mafia, the main people, we are for 25, around 25, who are really there every week, every month. We have people who are working, but you have to know we are all volunteers, so we have our daily job, and after we are doing a Bike Mafia. So we have people also in the background with the homepage, with the translating, etc. And we have also people who are there also every week, 2-3 times on the streets, in the shelters, in the evenings. We are preparing the food, we are cooking, we are making team buildings, going to schools. But we have also volunteers who are just coming and they're leaving. So that's why we can't tell always the exact number of our volunteers, but we are a good team. And I think this is the most important.
Is there any other organizations like the Budapest Bike Mafia in Hungary?
Yes, but not so big.
Okay.
And not with so different projects. So we have organizations who are really sharing food, or just giving clothes, or just giving support, mentor support. But I don't know any other organizations that is so big and so multitasking organization.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background? Were you always a cyclist?
Yes. I started with cycling when I was a little girl, so around 3 or 4 years old. My father comes from a very poor family from a little village here in Hungary. And we spent a lot of time as kids in this village with my cousins and grandparents. The people didn't have any cars, only bicycles. So the same in my family. And that's why we had to learn cycling very soon. But I think it was really, really good. And then when I was 18, it was 2003, I moved from Budapest to the south part of Hungary, to Pécs. In this town, you can really feel the multiculturalism, and there are also a lot of students from all around the world, also from countries where cycling more popular than in Hungary. So I lived there, I met these people, and I couldn't avoid cycling because it was also cool and it was also faster than by public transport. And so I have to continue with cycling. And when I came back to Budapest 2 years ago, I joined the Bike Mafia.
Do the people you're serving ever get around by bicycle? It sounds like sometimes they do when you provide them bicycles. Are there people who are living outside who have bicycles on their own or are getting around that way?
Yeah, we have our own bikes, but as we are a lot of people already from week to week, and we have always people who are for the first time there, and maybe they don't have a bicycle, we offer them to give them bike for the one day or for the one night, or they can come also by walking. So we have always walking groups.
Oh, wow.
Know, then, because this is also easier to find. We have already several places where that we will find people, and that's why we need to make several groups for the sharing food.
You are listening to The Bike Show, broadcasting from the KBOO studio in Portland, Oregon. We are speaking with Ildiko Toth of the Budapest Bicycle Mafia, an organization dedicated to fighting neglect and apathy with the bicycle as an important ally.
And what are your future goals with the organization? What is, I mean, until hunger and homelessness are eliminated in your country and in the world, where do you see the organization going?
Yes, the main goal is to develop our current project. For example, we would like to involve more schools here in Budapest for projects, and that's why I'm working also in my school. I'm working in the British International School here in Budapest to involve more students, to create more creative projects, how people can help. And as I am the international contact to Budapest Bike Mafia, I am working also on that to make, to give a popularity to Bike Mafia also in other countries. For example, we plan also to create a Berlin Bike Mafia. We have already in Romania a Bike Mafia. So we would like to bring this mission, this task abroad.
So it will be like the real mafia, with branches everywhere and offers that the authorities can't refuse, hopefully.
So. That in this meaning, the Lax family, you know, that the mafia meaning in a good way to show what is this.
Well, and I think there's something beautiful that you reclaimed the word mafia and took it to say, hey, we're all part of this community of humanity, and
of course.
And that is what is important, and that's what we need to focus on.
Yes. Exactly.
And have you yourself have you traveled in Europe and ridden your bike elsewhere?
Yeah, I traveled a lot in my last 15 years.
Uh-huh.
I don't bring my own bike with me because I think it's more difficult, but in the Netherlands, also in Spain, in Cyprus, it was really easy to rent a bike. Mm-hmm. And when I'm abroad, and I really try to move by bike if it's possible. And I for example, I have always my Bike Mafia t-shirt with me. So I can make my organization more popular also in other countries. Yes. And I really love the freedom what a bicycle can give us. And I think this is also what we would like to share, to feel free when you ride a bike.
And I think that there's something beautiful about moving by foot or by bike through new spaces that you haven't been to in new countries, because you get to see it on a more slow level, you're interacting with people on the street more, and you're really making, once again, that mm-hmm. human connection.
Of course, here in Hungary, it's very popular. We have the Lake Balaton. This is the biggest lake here in Central Europe. And we make it every summer to go around the Lake Balaton for 3 or 4 days with a tent, with some people, some friends, and it's really fun.
How many kilometers is it?
Really,
how many kilometers is it around the lake?
260.
Whoa, that's a big lake.
It's a very big lake.
That's excellent. That sounds like fun. That sounds like something to come and join you.
Is there any
come and join us.
Is there anything that our listeners here, you know, our show is in Portland, Oregon. We have listeners all over the world, I hope. Is there anything we could do to help your organization?
What you could do, it was a very, very good first step, I think. And thank you so much that I could speak about our mission and our voluntary work. Helping is not only easy, I think it's the easiest thing what you can do. If you can just help, helping is also a cool thing. It makes us also cool.
Yeah, and
help the people if you can.
Are there any bike mafias in the United States right now?
Yes, I met a guy last week here in Hungary. He was from Denver, but actually he's a Hungarian guy, but he's, I think he lives already for 20 years in the United States, in Denver, in Denver, as I remember well. And he was really happy that he could join us. And we, every time when he will be here in Hungary, he will join us. He promised me.
Has he started one in Denver, though? Do you know?
I don't know, but he's a cyclist.
Because this seems like a really... This seems like a very good fit for someone in Portland to pick up the mantle and find out more and maybe create a Portland bike mafia that is doing something similar.
If you need support or help, just contact me. I mean, really.
Excellent. And we'll have all
I'm
of that.
For everything.
We'll have all that information on our Facebook page if you are interested, or you can always email the KBOO Bike Show if you want more of that information, and we can connect you. So what are, I think you talked about the goals for the future. Do you have any events particularly that are coming up soon or programs that are coming up soon?
We have tomorrow the Vitamin Commando project. It means that we will meet and we will prepare sandwiches with a lot of vegetables. We give fruits and just go after that to the street and give everything to the people on the street. This is our next event.
Excellent.
Here in Budapest.
And our time is almost up, unfortunately. So, Ildikó, can you tell our listeners how they could contact you or find out more about your organization? And we'll have,
yes,
of course,
you can
we'll have links also on our website. But what is a good place to contact you?
You can find us also on Facebook, Budapest Bike Mafia. And you can also write there a message, because these messages are landing in my email also. But if you check our homepage, bbm.hu, you can find everything also in English, and you can write us also an email, bbm@bbm.hu.
Well, Ildikó Toth, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your knowledge and your passion for helping people and riding bicycles and doing those two things together. It has been a pleasure to have you with us on the air from Hungary.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And greetings from Budapest to everybody.
Happy New Year. And if you ever make it to Portland, if you ever make it to Portland, Oregon, please contact us and be happy to host you.
Absolutely.
Definitely. And thank you so much.
You're welcome. You have been listening to The Bike Show, broadcasting from the KBOO Studios in Portland, Oregon. All shows are available as podcasts on bikeshow.portlandtransport.com, as well as on iTunes. My name is Tori Bortman, and I'd like to thank all our guests today, as well as my co-host, Alon Robb, our engineer, Tammy Dean, our web host, Chris Smith, and our editor, Josh Hetrick. All the best in the new year for safe and joyful rides. We will see you next month.
Two pedals, two wheels and a chain. Everybody, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam. You can ride up in Forest Park. You can ride with the light if you ride in the dark. You can ride from the mountain down to the beach. You can ride on a trail. You can ride in the street. You can ride through a puddle. You can ride in the rain. You can take it on a bus. You can take it on a train. Take a ride to the waterfront or down.
go. Let's get together to pedal and roam. It doesn't matter if you're big or small. You can take a ride to work, you can ride to the mall. Just keep the sky up above and the ground underneath. Get some wind in your hair and some bugs in your teeth. Ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam.
Attention, KBOO supporters. We apologize for the nonsensical on-air acknowledgments that have aired after recent membership drives. We assure you that those responsible have been dealt with appropriately, and the spot they conceived for this promo will never air. Please enjoy this message instead.
On behalf of the entire KBOO community, we'd like to offer our deepest and sincerest thanks for your contribution to KBOO's Give Guide campaign. Your support makes KBOO possible. Thank you!
Ah, free of complexity, controversy, and